Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Scientist Magazine, the 1st of December. Editorial by Richard Webb, I believe, or Emily Wilson, sorry. Safety must come first. Gene editing humans has huge potential, but caution is needed. Blood oath. Since the amazing potential of CRISPR gene editing became clear, scientists have held many summits and discussions on the subject. Indeed, the latest getting underway at Hong Kong as new scientists went to press. Now, CRISPR. Essentially, bacteria can defend themselves against viruses by actually having a little bit of genetic engineering at the bacterial level. They have the Cas9 cutting enzyme with a bit of guide RNA, which is similar to what has to be cut in the virus, and that goes around merrily cutting up any DNA which it doesn't like. And of course, we can use this, the repair mechanism, to keep on cutting until it changes. So if you don't like a piece of a piece of gene, it will go around, find that gene, and keep on cutting it until eventually it does make a mistake. And so it needs that guide RNA. So you just need two bottles, one with the Cas9, another one with the guide RNA. Get it into your cell, and there you have some genetic engineering, two squeeze bottles. The message that emerged is all this talking is crystal clear. It's far too soon to attempt germline genome editing in humans. The process by which the genome of an individual is edited in such a way that the change is hereditable. Absolutely. But on Monday came the news that a team in China has, it claims, created the world's first genetically edited humans, a pair of twin girls, see page 7. The researchers were, according to reports, trying to make individuals immune to HIV by deleting a single protein. The experiment, as reported so far, wouldn't have been legal in Europe, Canada, Australia. In China, there's only guidelines against it. And many think it's unethical, including myself. There are already many other ways to prevent HIV, and we don't know if deleting this protein is effective and safe. What's more, we don't even know if the process of CRISPR gene editing is safe yet. So once you edit this gene, what other genes do you edit which are similar? However, there is no doubt that in future, editing of our germline could be an extremely powerful tool for improving health. So, while more needs to be done to prevent rogue experiments, we should regard our genome as sacred and inviolable either. We shouldn't. We are all involuntary participants in a wildly unethical experiment called evolution. Oh dear. Each of us is born with around 100 new mutations. Even healthy people harbour many thousands of harmful mutations. Germline genome editing could help change this and allow future generations to live much longer and healthier lives. We are still a long way from this point, but we won't get there if all the countries go too far and ban all the research. Or quite the opposite. China's not going to, is it? Make it a green Christmas. The gradual drift of the festive season into November, or even earlier, is enough to elicit a bah humbug from even the jolliest old elf. Christmas early sliding is mostly driven by struggling shops trying to prop up sales with an end-of-year push. But it's indicative of a larger problem, the rampant consumerism that is despoiling the planet. Put simply, most people in the West are buying too much stuff, eating too much food, and then throwing too much of it in the bin. Thankfully, we have an antidote in the form of an ultimate guide for shrinking the environmental footprint of your Christmas, see page 22. This doesn't mean celebrating in a hair shirt, but rather minimizing the impacts of some of the worst festive excesses. Whether it is making your own gifts, cutting down on meat, or even just reusing wrapping paper, there are loads of ways to give you a warm holiday glow inside. Or, if you must buy something, at least let it feed your mind. See a guide to the best books of the year. And hey, at least you waited until December to break out the Christmas content. Oh dear, the 1st of December. Good God. Oh no, another AI article. All you have to do is mention AI and liberty and it goes together. Okay, this article by Chris Baranuk. Police plan to use AI to predict crime. Serious concerns have been raised of an ambitious UK policing project. Chris Baranuk reports. Now, I'm itching myself due to all these mozzies eating me at the moment. Look, I really think that's probably a bit intrusive of AI. I don't know. Okay, police in the UK want to predict violent crime using artificial intelligence, a new scientist can reveal. Thank you. You can reveal it? You don't know whether it's true, of course. The idea that individuals flagged by the systems will be offered interventions such as counselling to avert potential criminal behaviour or surveillance or be not given jobs. However, one of the world's leading data science institutes has expressed serious concerns about the project after seeing redacted versions of the proposals. Yeah, this is the black lines through it. The system called the National Data Analytics Solution, NDAS, uses a combination of AIs and statistics to try to assess the risk of someone committing or becoming a victim of gun or knife crime, as well as the likelihood of someone falling victim to modern slavery, the rise of predictive policing. See, right. Okay. Yeah. AI doesn't really concern me, it's just the mindset. The West Midlands Police is leading the project and has until the end of March 2019 to produce a prototype. Eight other police forces, including London's Metropolitan Police, the Greater Manchester Police, are also involved. NDAS is being designed so that every police force in the UK could eventually use it. Police funding has been cut significantly over recent years, so forces need a system that can look at all individuals already known to officers, with the aim of prioritising those who need intervention most urgently. You need intervention, says Ian Donnelly, the police lead on the project. For exactly what will happen when such individuals are identified, that is still a matter of discussion, says Donnelly. He says the intention isn't to preemptively arrest anyone, but rather to provide support from local health and social workers. Oh, yeah. For example, they could offer counselling to any individual with a history of mental health issues that has been flagged by the NDAS as being likely. I've just been eaten alive. My God, Father. Okay, sorry about this. As being likely to commit a violent crime. Potential victims could be contacted by social services. You're going to be mugged. Okay. This is the first project of its kind in the world, pooling multiple data sets from a number of police forces for crime protection, says Donnelly. In the early phases, the team gathered more than a terabyte of data from the local and national police databases, including records of people being stopped and searched and logs of crimes committed. Around 5 million individuals were identified with the data. That's a lot of information per individual, adding it up. How many terabytes? More than a terabyte. Okay. Looking at the data, the software found nearly 1,400 indicators that could help predict crime, including around 30 that were particularly powerful. Okay, these include the number of crimes an individual had committed with the help of others and the number of crimes committed by people in the individual's social group. The AI component of NDAS will use these indicators to predict which of the individuals known to police may be on a trajectory of violence similar to the observed past cases, but who haven't yet escalated their activities. Such people will be assigned a score indicating the likelihood of future offending. What I like to say is that if you don't like someone, you've got no proof, you've got an AI program, and you just say, look, the AI program said it was you, that's why I'm doing it. It's sort of just, I've got some real ethical problems there, in that it's all okay, except it's not no disinterested. It should be people who are disinterested in the data have access to it. It's like someone's got a grudge against someone. I'll just say, oh, yeah, I said I have to look at you. Westmorland's police hopes to generate its first predictions using NDIS early next year. It will work with UK's data watchdog, the Information Commissioner's Office, to ensure the system meets privacy regulations, like heck it will. However, aspects of the projects have already driven criticism. The team at the Alan Turing Institute in London saw a redacted version of the NDIS proposal last year and published their verdict this week. In the report, the team says there are serious ethical issues with NDIS and questions whether it is in the public good to intervene preemptively when someone may not have committed a crime or be likely to do so in future. He says the proposal is ethically well-intentioned but fails to recognise the important issues in full. An inaccurate prediction is a concern, basing on predictions of the past. Predictions on past arrests, analytical tools run the risk of limiting police inquiries to well-trodden locations to reinforce bias. Yeah, you've got a flashpoint and you get more patrols going around. It extracts the flashpoint. That's what happened with Rigson, I believe. This is Andrew Ferguson, the University District of Columbia. Arrests correlate with where police are deployed and not where crime is, which tends to be disproportionately affect people of colour and residents of poor areas, he says. Martin Innes, Director of Crime and Security Research Institute at Cardiff Institution, UK, says he is sceptical that the system will reliably predict offences at an individual level. The tool will probably be more useful for general locating communities at risk, he says. The Midlands Police has asked Innes and his colleagues to independently evaluate the effectiveness of NDIS at the day-to-day. An inherent difficulty with such systems is knowing whether predictions would have turned out to be valid had the police and other services not intervened, says Sandra Watcher at the Oxford Internet Institute. How would I know what this actually makes the right decision? That's something that's very hard to measure. I think it's just fraught with too much money, too much jargon. The rise of predictive policing. This is a little by story. Around the world, police are increasingly using data to predict crime. Predpol, developed by Santa Clara University, California, tries to identify future crime hotspots, for example. The system has been used by US and UK. The Los Angeles Police has a program that assigns a risk score based on traits such as whether someone has had previous conviction or known member of a gang. Patrols are adjusted to keep a closer eye on the riskiest people. Yeah, I was in LA at the time of the riots in, I think, 1991. It was just dreadful. 1990. The Netherlands uses another software tool that analyzes crime, Vandervolk. As well as social data, such as someone's age, income, and whether they claim benefits. Yeah. This is used to predict whether the city-specific types of crimes are more likely to occur. Some applications have come in for condemnation, however. Earlier this year, Human Rights Watch criticised the Chinese authorities for allegedly using predictive policing to preemptively detain people in the province of Xinjiang. My point exactly, that you don't like someone, you say, I'm afraid I have to. It's not me. It's not. Yes. Today it was biased, but today it's a biased assumption that I put into my algorithms. The world's first gene-edited babies announced. Alice Klein and Michael LaPlage. They probably wanted to talk about this one. A woman in China has given birth to two genetically edited girls, according to the Associated Press news agency. The aim of the experiment, I suppose, it must have been one cell that was edited and then it just broke into two to form identical twins, so that's how it would do. So I can't imagine you. Okay, let's see what it says. The aim of the experiment was to create children who are immune to HIV. Oh, yes. But it hasn't yet been independently verified. What's going to be to do is where the political party gets in a mood to create people who conform always with the political party. That's the end of the human race, I'd say. The experiment has been widely criticised as unethical, even by those in favour of using gene editing in eggs, sperm and embryos to prevent diseases in children if it can be done safely. The critics include more than 100 prominent Chinese scientists around the world who have signed a letter condemning the experiment. One way HIV infects a cell is bombarded with proteins on the surface called CCR5. The team in China, led by He Yangqiu of the Southern University of China Research Technology in China, in Shenzhen, says he used CRISPR gene editing technique to try to disable the gene CCR5. But we don't yet know if it's safe to delete both copies of the CCR5 gene in every cell of the body. We don't know what the full effects will be, says Greg Neely of the University of Sydney, Australia. Seven pairs of men and women reportedly took part in the experiment. All of the men were HIV positive, and their sperm was treated to rid any HIV before it was injected into the eggs extracted by the partners. Oh dear. This is so confused. So, it's reasonable that they might contract HIV from it. It's just bizarre. The CRISPR gene editing machine was then injected into these embryos, so you have to actually put it into the embryo. Ooh, the embryo. I'm not sure if it was an egg, I'd believe it. In total, 22 embryos were made this way. To check the gene editing had worked, a single cell was removed from each embryo and analysed. He says that 16 embryos had been edited, 11 which were implanted. Only one pregnancy was successfully achieved and produced twins. Of the twins, one is said to have both her copies of CCR5 disabled. This means that her body won't make CCR5 protein, and her cells should be able to resist infection from strain HIV. They exploit CCR5, although not all do. What's more, the baby's mother doesn't have HIV, and her father, HIV, is apparently well controlled. Oh dear, this is just so bizarre. What about the other daughter? What does it mean that it looks as though it's only got some, of course. Similar measures should be enough to prevent the father from passing the HIV to his virus to his child, with no need for gene editing. Quote, there's no pressing need for this. It's totally inappropriate, says Neely. According to the Associated Press, the embryo of the second twin only had one copy of CCR5 disabled. There you go. So, CRISPR. CRISPR, yeah, just amazing. This child will still be vulnerable to all strains of HIV. The vast majority of biologists who use CRISPR gene editing think it's too early to attempt the use of human embryos because it's still too far from clear it's safe. In several studies, human embryos have been genetically edited to see if CRISPR works in people, and then destroyed rather than being implanted. The larger of these studies, done in the US, was widely reported as being successful, but in fact the findings have been questioned by many in the field and remain highly controversial. He was understood to have conducted the work at a private hospital while on unpaid leave from the Southern University of Science and Technology in China. Sounds dodgy as heck. The Shenzhen City Medical Ethics Expert Board has said it will launch an investigation as the China's National Health Commission. Quote, it is true, this experiment exposes healthy children to the risk of gene editing for no real necessary benefit, said ethicist Julian Savulescu of the University of Oxford told the UK Science and Media Centre. Savulescu says that if the science improvements, it might be reasonable to try using CRISPR on embryos with a lethal genetic mutation. Gene editing for this group might be life-saving, and for the twins, it's only life-risking. Absolutely. He's got a world first, but he's just going to be done. I think Australia was first with test tube babies, and the actual person provided the sperm. That's one of the horrible things. The rats are even sociable with robots. Alice Klein. Would you help a trapped robot? Or some rats would. The rodents can form social bonds with robots and will prevent rescue the robot. Will even rescue a robot rat that's trapped in a cage. Rats and other animals need to be highly attuned to social science from others so they can identify friends and cooperate with the enemy to cooperate with and enemies to avoid. To find out if this extends to non-living beings, Anne Lally Quinn at the University of California, San Diego, and her colleagues tested whether rats would detect social signals from robotic rats. They housed 8 adult rats with 2 types of robotic rats, one social and one asocial, for 4 days. The robot rats were quite minimalist, resembling a chunkier version of a computer mouse with wheels to move around and colorful markings. During the experiment, the social robot followed the living rats around and played with the same toys and opened a cage door to let trapped rats escape. Good God. Meanwhile, the asocial robot simply moved forward and backwards and side to side. Next, the researchers trapped the robots in cages and gave the rats the opportunity to release them by pressing a lever. Across the 18 trials, the living rats were 52% more likely, on average, to set the social robot free than the asocial one. Oh, that's bizarre. This suggests that the rats perceive the social robots as genuine social beings, says Quinn. The rats have bonded more with the social robots because it displays behaviors like communal exploring and playing. This could lead to the rats remembering having freed it earlier and wanting the robots to return the favor when they get trapped, she says. Rats have been shown to engage in multiple forms of reciprocal help and cooperation, including what is referred to as direct reciprocity, where a rat will help another rat that has previously helped them, says Quinn. This readiness for rats to befriend the social robot was surprising given its minimal design, says Janet Wills of the University of Queensland in Australia, who helped in this research. The robot was the same size as a regular rat, but resembled a simple plastic box and wheels. We assumed we'd have to give it moving head and tail, facial features, and put a scent on it to make it smell like a real rat. But that wasn't necessary, says Wilkins. Finding shows how sensitive rats are to social cues, and when they come from basic robots, says Wilkins. Similarly, children would treat robots as if they were our fellow beings, and even when the display on this is only simple social signals, she says. Humans seem to be fascinated by robots, and it turns out other animals are too, says Wilkes. Misuse of a nerve pain drug spikes in Australia. Australia is the latest country to report an alarming rise in the use of a nerve pain drug called pegabalin. Pegabalin is a non-opioid drug that reduces pain by acting on the calcium channels in the brain. It was originally developed to treat epilepsy, but is now approved for treating nerve pain, the prickling, tingling sensation that can accompany conditions like diabetes, multiple sclerosis. In some countries, it has been approved for treating anxiety and muscle pains. Anecdotal evidence suggests that the doctors are turning to pegabalin for other types of pain due to the growing concerns about the harms of opiate painkillers such as oxycodone and codeine, says Shalani Arunagirl at the Monash University in Melbourne. This is reflective of the increased rates of pegabalin prescriptions, she says. Pegabalin is now the 13th best-selling drug in the US and has been testing rates more than doubled in Australia and more than tripled in the UK in recent years. However, pegabalin is shaping up to be just as problematic as the opioids, says Aaron O'Gurry. Her research shows that since 2012, ambulance call-outs in the Australian state of Victoria as a result of people misusing the drug has increased from 0.28 to 3.32 per cases of 100,000 people. at Trenridge. There is mixed use in the other parts of the country. Some recreation drug users have reported taking large doses of pregabalin to experience euphoric and sedative effects, says Aaron Gori. Her studies found that half the people who were treated by paramedics for pregabalin misuse had a history of drug and alcohol misuse, depression, self-harm, and suicidal thoughts. I just would question that. You know, what about half the people on another drug? I don't quite understand. Similar misuse patterns have been noted in other parts of the world, England and Wales. For example, a number of deaths involving pregabalin or related nerve pain drug called gabapentin rose from fewer than one per year, 237 for 7 years. A recent study in four US states found that gabapentin, which is the other one, was present in 22% of people who had died from drug overdoses. What the heck? In response, the UK recently announced that it will make it illegal to possess pregabalin without a prescription from April 2019. The US Food and Drug Administration is also considering to introduce their controls on pregabalin. So this will be on the health supplement scale of things. Mini placentals grown in the lab for the first time. So placenta is like a halfway house organ that feeds off the mother. Mother's blood supply starts producing hormones and actually drives the mother's pregnancy. Tiny human placentas grown in a dish are so close to the real thing that they can fool pregnancy tests into giving a positive result. The aim to develop full-size placenta, but to study why some pregnancies go wrong. Most cells used in lab studies form a flat layer when grown in a dish, as they do. This unnatural environment means they don't behave as they would surrounded by other cells in the body in the past few years. Sounds like 3D printers are going to come in. Okay. We have found the right clues to coax these cells for several types of tissues into forming complex 3D structures, creating miniature organs known as organoids. Ashley Wolf at the University of Cambridge and her team looked at hormones and drugs, similar molecules released by the placenta and the uterus, and worked out by trial and error which one was needed to grow placental organoids in the lab. Group of samples of human placentas from early abortions and broke the tissue apart. Then they add cells to clumps of gel-like substances to help support the 3D structure. They could grow mini placentas just half a millimeter wide. The lack of blood supply limited further growth. Organoids produced from various placental proteins and formed into finger-like projections characteristic of the placenta microstructure. Okay, that's the finger they interdigitate the thing. The placenta is just the most amazing organ. I'm just blown away at it. The team also did tests to confirm that cells of the fetal origin, as perhaps in pregnancy, and not maternal. After several days, the organoids were making a range of hormones, including one detected pregnancy test. Human chorionic gonadotropin, a test kit placed, the dish showed a pregnant result. Moffat's other work will help us understand why several pregnancies lead to stillbirths, maybe babies, small babies in preeclampsia, a dangerous rise in the blood pressure of a pregnant woman. I'll read this article and then buy fish and chips to the family. Design matters most for anti-pollution masks. So there's a picture there of these happy cyclists going in pollution. This is one of the things, you want more people on bikes and you don't get rid of cars, they're just going to suckle in. City air is a killer. Governments are trying to cut urban pollution by encouraging the use of bikes. But this exposes people who cycle to emissions from the cars that don't. Are anti-pollution face masks the answer? Fulvio Amato at the Institute of Environmental Research and Western Research and Water Assessment in Barcelona, Spain Institute, and its colleagues have tested non-commercially available masks aimed at cyclists for filtering air pollution. The best screened out nearly half the most harmful particles the cyclists breathe in. Oh, half is really not good enough, my friend. Air pollution has been linked to respiratory, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer. It may also harm fetuses and impair the cognitive function of children and adults. You'd like to see that measured, don't you? In 2014, the World Health Organization estimated that pollution was a factor in 7 million premature deaths worldwide. In fact, the estimates factor. One of the nastiest things swirling around the city is particulate matter, small particles spat out in exhaust fumes, or tiny fragments of car tires, brake pads, and road surfaces. Darling? Particles less than 2.5 micrometers in diameter, known as PM 2.5, can damage the lungs or even enter the bloodstream. Yeah, that's true. A little cilia hair can't do it. A Amato study is the first to test face masks designed for cyclists in an urban environment rather than in the lab. The team fitted the masks to dummies and exposed them to inertia traffic in Barcelona. You can imagine that being real fun to simulate the increased respiratory rate of cyclists. Dummies sucked in the air at three different speeds. The best masks reduce the intake of PM 2.5 by 48%. It had a filter with three different layers that covered the entire inside surface. The mask was also better fit the dummy's face than others. The worst mask only had filters over two air intake valves that didn't fit well. If the mask didn't fit properly, it became ineffective, says Gary Fuller of the King's College, who wore a professionally fitted mask to protect against asbestos in his previous job. Anyone who works in hazardous environment knows you have to get the seal right, he says. Even opening your mouth to breathe can affect the seal. Any leaks and it doesn't work, he says Fuller. And if you have a beard, just forget it. It's not snood and all that stuff. Cycling masks don't protect against harmful gases such as nitrogen dioxide. Chemical filters exist, but they have much more expensive. This is a matter of surely catalytic converters are important. Wearing a mask won't do you any harm, but Mato recommends simply avoiding rush hour traffic and busy roads. If there's a cycle path by the side of the road, it makes sense to use it. Distance from the road edge makes a great difference, he says. Even a few meters significantly decreases exposure. Fuller agrees. His team has helped to identify less polluted paths around London. The data went into developing an online tool called Clean Air Route Finder. Oh my God. Which suggests low pollution routes between locations based on the air quality readings of the day. Well, that's actually an app. Other apps exist in other parts of the world. Thank goodness, because you want a different air camera. Despite the pollution, cycling around the city is far better for your health than driving, whatever the route. You're probably exposed to less air pollution on a bike than in a car, because the car's passengers sit directly behind the car's exhaust. This is full on. Several studies have also found that the benefits of physical activity more than compensate for the negative effects of pollution, he says, by Douglas Heffin. I would say, and often people, I don't know why people, it's bizarre, people have got a strong preference for direct air intake from the outside while driving. I just don't understand. You really would want something. Okay, thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.